know, Scott Baio, I really screwed up last night.
And welcome to this episode of Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I even have the URL to prove it. But anyways, today is April 3rd, 2012, and you are listening to Radio DMG. So, what are we doing this episode? Well, what we're going to do is, I was looking through the rest of my content that we had from Anime Land Wasabi, and I was like, well, I can put all this on one episode, and that's exactly what we're going to go ahead and do. We have an interview with Julie Ray Goldstein, a little bit of her Q&A, and then a double interview with Steven Nunez and Lisa Wilkerson. So, you're getting quite a bit of content this time around, as well as newsity. So, before we get into that, let me tell you real quick about what's happening. Normally, we don't record on a Tuesday, but we're recording on a Tuesday today because this is going to be one heck of a busy week. If you've been following what we've been doing, we launched the website for animationisart.com. We also recently went to a movie showing for Redline that was with the Denver Film Society's Watching Hour and Non-Descon. And that was interesting, very, very interesting show. But we launched animationisart.com, which you can also get to if you type in coloradoanime.com. But yes, we're working on the store. It's I'll have more pictures of it up soon. We'll start cleaning up stuff and moving things in. It is go. But that's something I guess I should save for the newsity. Welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and here is the newsity. Remember, it's not news until it's newsity. Well, April Fool's came and went, and we didn't update for that. We don't update for April Fool's Day if it's on a weekend. I think we did once, and like, honestly, we don't have a format where we do normal newsity like we used to. So, I really don't have much of an incentive to do that. I was thinking of taking, like, the little ICANN, website seized by the government things, and editing one of those, and then just using that on all our little things, but I thought, nah, that's kind of dumb. In fact, most of the stuff this year is kind of dumb. There was some stuff I liked. I think Sega had Bass Fishing of the Dead, which was amusing, and ThinkGeek had a bunch of little things where they had like an inflatable Star Trek chair, and Minecraft marshmallow creeps, and a couple other things that were interesting. I really liked the marshmallow creeps. Unfortunately, I don't think those are going to end up as a real product because a lot of people voted for the stupid inflatable Star Trek chair. When you're sitting on your stupid Star Trek inflatable captain's chair, and you're suddenly craving some awesome green marshmallows, remember, you could have had Minecraft Marshmallow Creeps. So if you didn't vote for it, shame on you. Shame on you. You're a bad person. And children should run away from you in fear. Kittens and puppies should scowl at you for the wrong that you have done. Shame! But if at any point Think Geek decides they really want to make those, cool. I think I would buy those over, say, Angry Birds pork rinds. Eh. But yeah, then there was, Capcom announced that they were going to restart development on Mega Man Legends 3, then promptly canceled it. That was stupid. I don't know. April Fool's Day is kind of like, I don't really like April Fool's Day, but I thought I'd go ahead and talk a little bit about DMG Ice and April Fool's Day. Some of the things that we've done for April Fool's Day actually ended up being things, and that's kind of the weird thing about it. In fact, I made a list. I was going through our news archives that I have a copy of, because we no longer have those available on the site, because I'm going to do something with them. But here are some of the ones we had in the past. One of them was a port of Legend of Zelda 1 and 2 on the Game Boy, Game Boy Color. What's ironic or horrible about that is we made our little fake Game Boy cartridges for those. Then I found out later on in an interview with Flagship that when Capcom wanted to make a Legend of Zelda game. So the people who made The Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons, to pitch their idea, they made a port of Legend of Zelda 1 and 2 for the Game Boy and Game Boy Color. And I'm like, what, really? Really? The other thing that year was Pokemon Yellow having Game Boy Color enhancements, which turned out to be true. Then we did, one year we did a port of Lunar Silver Star Story for the Game Boy Advance, and that came out as Lunar Legends. Then it was Final Fantasy VI being ported to the Game Boy Advance, and that happened. Then there was Chrono Trigger on the Game Boy Advance or Game Boy Next. Game Boy Next never came out, and that ended up being the DS, which, by the way, there's a Chrono Trigger for it. Oh, by the way, we also had one year where we're saying that the Game Boy Next was going to include a specialized ARM chip capable of better wireless and would feature downloadable titles. Also, that using the chip, they were going to have 3D without glasses, and it would match the Gecko chip in power, the Gecko chip being the one in the GameCube. And that Nintendo was working with Kodak and another company on putting an OLED screen on it. Turns out, Nintendo was working with Kodak and another company on putting a 3D screen on the 3DS, which uses an ARM chip, which is comparable to the Gecko GameCube processor, and has 3D without glasses and wireless downloadable titles. But we were just one generation back away from that. The other stuff was like, we had an original Metal Gear Solid game that would take place before the original Metal Gear Solid title for the Game Boy Advance. And oddly enough, there is one called Peace Walker for the PlayStation Portable. And then the other one was Metal Gear Solid Files on the Game Boy Advance. Files was going to have the MSX versions of 1 and 2 on one cartridge. And for those picking up the Metal Gear Solid HD collection for the Vita later this year, yeah, that has the MSX 1 and 2 titles on it, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Oh, the other ones were Golden Sun 2 being censored, some type of onsen, which is like a hot springs sequence being removed. Of course, that never came true. In fact, some games like Riviera and Yggdra Union on the Game Boy Advance actually have those types of sequences in them, and they're uncensored as well. So that never came true. The other one was something about Namco purchasing Sega. That kind of happened. Then there was one where we were talking about THQ canceling Yoda Stories and beginning work on a Home Alone 3 game. In retrospect, I kind of wish that was true. Another one we did was DS movie cards from Majesco with a brand new codex from Actimagine, which, if you've played many third-party titles, you'll notice that there is, in fact, newer codexes from Actimagine, and I actually do own a DS movie card, but for the Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess trailer. So that kind of happened in a weird way. Then there was one where we were telling people, you know, if you hold down the select button, you start with this, and you have to play for a certain amount of time, you could unlock a very complicated debug glitch for Pokemon Red and Blue, where you could change what type of Pokemon show up in the grass. Turns out there is a complicated debug glitch for that that requires you to capture, like, the missing number hex sign. And I was like, oh, well then, eh. Then one of the other ones was Yuna, Amoogle, and Sephiroth being added to Snowboard Kids for the DS. That didn't happen. Oh well. But yeah, those were a lot of our April Fool's jokes in the past. And that's just weird how many of those actually came true in one form or another. So I kind of don't like to make these predictions, especially if they're bad ones. So, yeah. But yeah, going on to actual news. The PlayStation Vita updated recently to 1.65 firmware here in the U.S. and in Japan. In Europe, they said there was something wrong with the update, so they pulled it to re-put it back up at some point. My guess is because of the different space signatures in... whenever you're applying something to a different region, each region has different sizes for your basic memory RAM. What you're actually accessing has different sizes. For example, Japanese, the little bit that you have to use for that, for a katakana and different types of the figures, actually takes up less space than it does for the U.S., and then there's more space that's needed for parts in Europe. Update 1.65 is out in North America and in Japan, and it adds the ability to change the sleep mode from 5 minutes to 10 minutes, and the ability to use caps locks when you're typing, and the ability to turn off notifications completely, as well as the ability to, when you turn off the system, it doesn't automatically turn the Bluetooth back on when you turn it back on. So it was just general fixes. I don't expect any huge updates to PlayStation Vita before firmware 2. Because usually their single number firmwares are the ones where there's a lot that happens to it. Okay, let's see. They also announced in Japan that apparently in Japan, Sony had a promotion where if you purchased a PlayStation Vita, they would give you a 4 gig memory card for free. Some retailers are doing that, and Sony extended that promotion to help the flagging sales of the Vita. And the Vita's not doing so hot in Japan. In fact, it's not doing so hot over here. There's some small developers here in the U.S. who have dropped their Vita teams. In fact, there's a from what I was reading with, they didn't say which company, because the ESA doesn't really, the Entertainment Software Administration doesn't really state this. It was on the forums. And this is really more or less that some of the smaller development companies, in fact, one of them here in Colorado, dropped their Vita development team. So it's two or three people were just okay, we're assigning you to something different. So it doesn't really mean anything, but it does mean that there is kind of a flagging confidence on the Vita, and that's really a shame, because the unit is a nice unit, and I can't wait to see what they do with the system later on. Oh, another thing that happened recently is Zipper, the company that put out Unit 13 recently on the PlayStation Vita, as well as the SOCOM series, they are no more. Sony officially dissolved that particular development house. People from there went on to other things, or on to unemployment. It's the Obama economy. It's even hurting companies like Sony. Anywho, back to good news. Let's see. There's some stuff coming out for the 3DS Virtual Console. Power of Illusion actually was confirmed. That's that new Epic Mickey 2. Power of Illusion was confirmed. It's not an eShop thing. It's a retail title for the Nintendo 3DS from the people who made Henry Hatsworth and Monster Tail. And it's all sprite-based, and it should be really awesome. And it is more or less a direct take or sequel to Castle of Illusion, World of Illusion, Land of Illusion. And, I like that. Yep. Illusion. But anyways, in Australia, they announced a rating for Defenders of Oasis and Shining Force Sword of Hajja, which are both Game Gear RPGs, and they received ratings in Australia for their 3DS Virtual Console re-releases. Now, these have not been announced for the US or Japan, so it's kind of odd that Australia got an announcement for them, and that they have ratings in Australia. They both came out in Japan and North America, so we'll probably see them later this year. Also, something we'll see later this year, or maybe later this month, Wario Land 1 was announced for release in the United States in Nintendo Power. Like I said, a long time ago, it was supposed to come out in December, and it did, in Japan. There was a bit of hassle with the game's slowdown because they're trying to make it the proper emulation. And in order to emulate the games properly on the system, you have to emulate the slowdown as well. I did a review of Wario Land recently on the original Game Boy, and it has some almost game-breaking slowdown in many places. It also has balance issues. In fact, it's a good game. It's not a great game. In fact, there's a lot of nostalgia glasses on about how good that game actually is. But it's a good platformer, and it looks like Nintendo Power announced that we'll be getting it here in the U.S. sometime in probably April, May. Okay, cool. In Japan next week, Wario Land 2 for the Game Boy Color is coming out. It's going to be about 700 yen, which makes it about $7. It's the Game Boy Color game, which is funny because the Game Boy Color version of Wario Land 2 wasn't released in Japan originally. They had the Game Boy version. In fact, here in the U.S., we had a Game Boy version of Wario Land 2 right near the end of the Game Boy's lifespan, and then the Game Boy Color version came out like less than 2 months after it and was backwards compatible unless you popped it into a... It was weird. It was one of those games like Conker's Pocket Tales where if you put it on a Game Boy Color, you'd play the Game Boy Color version of it. If you put it into a normal Game Boy, it would ask you to... It would tell you that it can't save information for both the Game Boy and Game Boy Color version in there, so it would delete your save and then switch into Game Boy mode. And if you put it back into a Game Boy Color, it would delete your save and switch to Game Boy Color mode. It was just one of those weird, weird quirks of the Game Boy Color compatible black game packs. Which, by the way, the Game Boy Color Black Game Packs do count as Game Boy Color games because they're separate ROMs, not just a color palette to it. There's a big difference between older Game Boy games where there's a palette to it, than Game Boy Color games where there was an actual secondary ROM which held all the Game Boy Color information. Kind of like how when you pop Donkey Kong 1994 into a Super Game Boy, it had a separate ROM for that, where there was some voice added to it and different color palettes. That's completely different than the Game Boy version that's in it. It's weird and it's technical, but it's true. So anyways, yeah, Wario Land 1 in North America sometime this month or next month. Yeah, okay. And then Wario Land 2 next week in Japan. Also, Kirby's Block Ball was delayed from, it was supposed to be out in the first fiscal period of this year, and that ended on March 31st, and we're now in April, so I guess it got delayed. Nintendo had announced that along with like Colors 3D and a couple other things, which by the way, Colors 3D is coming out this Thursday on the Nintendo eShop, and that's that one that I mentioned that has vector-based drawing. And you can export your creations and such on that to the SD card and then share them, etc. Oh, we announced, or rather put a button up for something called Nintendo Network. I'll let you know more about that in the future. For right now, I think you should check out and bookmark animationisart.com, as well as following. Go to the website, then use the website to get to our Facebook and to our Twitter. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, etc., etc. As for the basic news, that's pretty much it. There's a couple game announcements and just a new firmware. It's been kind of a slow time, I guess you could say, for the handhelds. Although there is some, there is a news story that I thought I would comment on because I was listening to other podcasts, or rather other broadcasts, which is what I do sometimes, and I noticed a lot of people mentioning this one. There was a article on the Nikkei, which is the Nikkei BP, which is Nikkei BP announced that. Okay, I'm trying to figure out the best way to broach this one because it was a Brand Japan 2012 survey that was online, got 52,000 people aged 18 or older to conduct it. Took place in November and December, and was there were two categories. One had over 1,000 brands, the other had over just 500 brands. And there was a bunch of Apple websites that picked this up, and then I think in one of the podcasts I listened to, Cross Border Gaming, they wanted me to comment on this. So I was like, okay, I'll comment on it, I guess. I think they want me to rant on it because they have no idea what type of person I am. Eh. So anyways, they wanted me to comment on this. So I'm going to comment on this. Let's see. This was on the Nikkei Business that publication, which is a print magazine, but this was an online survey. Okay, Apple. The headline is, Apple picked its top consumer brand in Japan for the first time. What's funny about that is a lot of people pick this up and they're like, they finally beat Google. They beat Nintendo and Sega and Sony. Actually, when you look at the actual article, it's from Tokyo. It's from the Nikkei, which is a private company. They put out a business publication called Nikkei. Anyways, Apple Incorporated took top honors for the first time in the annual brand evaluation survey of consumers by Nikkei BP Consulting Incorporated. In other words, it was some consultants who wrote this story. But it's, here's the funny thing. They said scoring 90.5 points for total brand power, Apple catapulted from 11th last year. Its iPad, tablet, computer, and two other key products, the iPhone S, also made the list for the top 40 brands. It was a... I was looking at this here, and when you look at the headline, yeah, that's the thing that bugs me so much, really. People look at the headlines, and then they sensationalize what's actually not the story. In fact, Apple didn't actually take the top consumer brand in Japan. In fact, in the article it says, in a survey of business people, the U.S. technology giant took second behind Toyota Motor Corp. So, they didn't even take first place, but it's being reported that they took first place. It's kind of like when you have NBC editing news clips to make it sound like taking out whole sentences to make people sound racist. Or I think, what was it, ABC saying, well, this person here doesn't have any blood in this video, but there's pictures of it here, but we don't acknowledge those. We acknowledge a video. But yeah, Apple didn't even place first on this poll. And it's a poll on a website which had about 52,000 anonymous people commenting on it, or rather clicking a little thing and posting on it. I'm like, wait. So everybody is all hyped up about an online survey which anyone could answer. What? It's from a consulting firm. This is like saying that everything Michael Pachter says is correct. I'm like, wait a second. If you aren't going to do the research on your news story, and you're just going to look at the headline and not what's under the surface, please don't comment on it. You're not doing anyone any favors. Okay? But yeah, that was the thing. Apparently Apple won top consumer brand in Japan for the first time, except they came in second. Okay, whatever. Apple makes some decent phones, and the iPad's neat. And okay. Well, back to website news. Yes, we'll be launching Anime is Art, the store soon. Looking forward to it. Animation is art. Sorry, Animation is Art. But yeah, that's pretty much it. There's not any real news, so let's go ahead and get on to our features. We've got three features for you today. We have a interview we did with I wrote the person's name down. Thank you, Sarah. Julie Ray Goldstein. And we have a bit of her Q&A. And then we have an interview with Steven Nunez and Lisa Wilkerson, all from Anime Land Wasabi 2012. And that will actually conclude our coverage of Anime Land Wasabi 2012. Now, like I mentioned before with the previous one, the audio quality here is a little suspect. So remember, here's the rules. Take a drink every time an elevator bell goes off. Take a drink every time the background chatter in the Q&A one overpowers the person talking. Take a really long drink when you can't hear the person asking the question. So, those are the rules, and let's get on with our feature presentation. Welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm here at Anime Land Wasabi 2012 with
Julie Ray Goldstein. Hi, guys.
So, people who might not be familiar with you or what you do, who are you and what do you do?
I'm a voice actress in anime and video games. I also do work in front of the camera.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. But in anime, you might have heard me in shows like Paradise Kiss, Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha. I was the villain in that, Precia Testarossa. I was in Eureka 7. I was also in Tweeny Witches, video game-wise. I've been in Magna Carta 2. Majin in the Forsaken Kingdom. And I recently played Mute in Artanelico Koga, the latest Artanelico game.
Hmm. So how did you get started in this particular industry?
Personally, my story is I kind of came into it as a fan because I've been a fan of anime since the late 90s. And when I moved to the States, because I actually grew up in South America, I realized that anime was more than just Dragon Ball Z and Kenshin and Sailor Moon. And I started watching things like Fushigi Yugi, Nadesco, Cardcaptor Sakura, and I just became so enamored. And I started going to conventions like crazy. And learning from other voice actors as I went to conventions, I decided that I wanted to, you know, throw my hat in the ring, see if I could make it. And I started taking acting classes. And back in 2005, Anime Expo held a competition called AX Idol for voice acting and singing. And I participated in the voice acting portion. And the two judges were Crispin Freeman and Taliesin Jaffe of Helsing. And I ended up winning. They loved my performance. They loved what I brought to the table. And from there, I got my first audition at Bang Zoom Entertainment. They loved my work. They brought me in for a couple shows. And kind of from there, it just snowballed. Started getting more work. Got an agent. And from there, got even bigger work.
So, what was it like growing up in South America? Where in South America did you grow up?
Oh, wow. That's a question I don't get asked very often. I grew up in Venezuela, specifically in Caracas. Sadly, it's a country that currently is not very stable because of Hugo Chavez. He kind of came into dictatorship in late 1998, and thankfully I left the country in 99 when I moved out to go to college in California. And thankfully, it was the right time to leave there because at Hugo Chavez coming into power was not a pretty sight. People were scared and kind of. He basically changed the Constitution to keep himself in power forever. But before that, I mean, the people were amazing. That's one of the things that I miss the most about Venezuela. It's the people. The people are so kind, so friendly. And I still have friends from Venezuela that I will cherish till I die.
So what did you go to college for?
Originally, when I went into college, I started studying molecular biology. I'm actually a biology nerd, and I love genetics, and that was like what I really wanted to do. But the more I kind of got into it, the more I kind of started realizing that maybe it wasn't the path for me. And then I discovered my love for anime and video games, and kind of from there, I figured, you know, let me try and see what it's like to do the acting side. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do acting as a minor, not a major. But I started actually working on plays and doing classes, and professors loved me, directors loved me, and I was just enamored with the work that I was doing that I decided, you know what, this can't just be a minor thing. This has to be my full-time thing.
So what plays have you been in?
Oh, gosh. Back in college, I did a lot of Shakespearean stuff. I'm a classically trained actress. I've done a lot of Shakespearean stuff. Did Hamlet. I did As You Like It. I've done David Mamet plays, which are very, very hard to do. They're very wordy, and it takes a lot of investigating and determining what exactly he means with these words. It's great. David Mamet, I think, is one of the greatest playwrights ever. I also, while I was in college, I did the Vagina Monologues. V-Day is a cause that's very near and dear to my heart. There is an epidemic of violence against women worldwide, especially in third world areas like Africa and some parts of Asia, and unfortunately, and of course, the Middle East, most of all. And I really think that we need to bring this to light to stop these atrocities that have been going on as everyday things for decades. So I'm a huge fan of Eve Ensler and her work, and I also recently did the Vagina Monologues in LA. I was very, very proud to be part of V-Day LA of 2011. One of the most rewarding experiences of my life. More recently, I've been doing shows at a theater called the Next Stage Theater in LA, in Hollywood. I worked with a director called Chris Baroub, who is a sweetheart, one of the biggest sweethearts and treasures of the acting community in LA, in my personal opinion. I did a show with him called The Vampire Masquerade, where I got to be a vampire and a witch, and it was amazing, because I felt like I was bringing my animation style to the table for the stage, and it was one of the first times I was actually able to be as big as possible.
also, it's for correct answers.
Oh, okay. So I guess that was correct.
Oh, yeah.
I also did with him Seven Deadly Sins, a show where I played Vanity. Really, really cool character. She's this socialite who's obsessed with plastic surgery, and it was so much fun to do that because I really did get to bring my own flavor to the table too. I got to kind of play around with some of the words and bring in my nerddom. There's one point where in that show where I had to exclaim, "Oh my stars!" That was the actual line, and because I'm such a nerd, I started, instead of that during rehearsal, I started throwing out nerd words, and the one that stuck was "jumpin' gigawatts." So I started yelling "jumpin' gigawatts," and the director loved it, and so I just kept doing it, and it kind of became an in joke.
So since you did get to play Vanity, out of the Seven Deadly Sins, what was your favorite? Like,
wow.
What's your favorite of the seven deadly sins?
What's my favorite?
Favorite vice.
Favorite vice, okay. Pretty sloth, though. You know, I have to say lust.
Ah.
I'm not going to say why. I'm keeping it PG.
Oh, you know, well, we can tag stuff with NSFW if needed.
It's okay. It's okay. I think I said it all just in that.
Oh, okay. So, like, have you done anything else with, like, V-Day or the Vagina Monologues in terms of other charity work or anything?
I've worked with a couple different other projects. I have a huge thing for the It Gets Better and the anti-bullying initiatives. I really think that bullying, especially in the U.S., has become an epidemic. And I did a short film recently called Billy Spear, which specifically was to benefit the It Gets Better project and anti-bullying initiatives. And I can't wait till that actually starts getting shown in festivals, because it's such a great work, and it's so eye-opening, I think.
Yeah, bullying is a big problem here in the United States, especially amongst the GLBT community. Mm-hmm. Would you say so?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not just... Here's the thing. I don't think it's just the LGBT community. I think it's anybody who is perceived to not be gender-conforming. You know, even... I remember when I was in high school in Venezuela, there were kids who people, you know... They weren't even actually gay. They just, people thought they were gay, and they got bullied because of that. It's ridiculous, and it's something that should never happen. It's something that no child should ever know exists.
Yeah, it is a pretty tragic thing, especially here. Especially a lot of the people at these conventions, that happens a lot there. Mm-hmm. We'll ask a little bit about like how people can get past that or deal with that a little bit later in the interview, but before we get into that, you play a lot of villainous characters and such. How do you get into that villainous mood, that character mood?
You know, I love villains for the particular reason that, especially in anime, you see this phenomenon of villains who aren't just villains because they're evil. They're villains because something happened to them that made them become the person that they are. And I think it actually ties back into bullying, because a lot of times people have different responses to things. Sometimes a response to bullying is fighting back, and that can sometimes be perceived as quote-unquote evil because you're initiating violence, but it's kind of violence because of other violence. It's a horrible cycle. But that's kind of how I see it. I don't necessarily see it as getting into like an evil persona. I look at the character and I look at the circumstances of that character to understand why they've become the person that they've become. And that's something that I've loved since I started getting into anime. One of the earliest animes that I saw was Fushigi Yugi, and I just remember at first looking at the character of Nakago and thinking, oh my god, what a a-hole. And then when I saw his backstory about how his tribe was decimated and his mother was tortured and he's the last of his race, I began to understand him. And spoiler alert, when he dies, they have that little flashback to him as a child, and you're supposed to be cheering that the villain is dead, but honestly, all I wanted to do when I saw that was cry, because I felt bad for him. You know, he wasn't doing these things. He wasn't trying to take over the empire because of greed. He was trying to do it to make his tribe accept it. So that's how I see villains, especially in video games and anime, where the storylines are a lot more... A lot deeper than you see in a lot of other media.
Hmm. Going back to the bullying, have you ever had any experience with bullying? Like, have you ever been bullied?
I had bullying sometimes. When I was in school, I was very much of a nerd, not so much because of... Oddly enough, I was very studious.
Studious. Yes.
I'm losing my words this late into the convention.
It's like, oh no.
I was incredibly studious. I was, I guess what you'd call it in the U.S., it's the equivalent of a mathlete. I went out to like national math competitions in Venezuela, and that was my thing, and I always had like professors telling me, it's like, oh my gosh, you need to go into mathematics because you're a genius and you can solve all these problems. And and that honestly was where I got like most of my backlash from. People just, I guess they just didn't, you know, I got the entire thing of people saying, it's like, oh, do my homework or we'll take your lunch money sort of thing. But I mean, that's more of a dramatic way of putting it. But that was the kind of thing that I experienced.
It's okay.
All stuff going on around here. It's the last day of the convention, so a lot of hustle-bustle.
Hustle-bustle, definitely. So what do you think of the convention so far? I mean, well, it's the last day of it. Have you had fun?
I've loved it. The people here in Denver have been amazing. I think my only complaint about Denver is I think the height has made my skin a little too dry. But it's kind of like Venezuela, where it's the environment of Venezuela was not that great, but the people made it worth being there. And I think, especially when I go to a con like this, where it's so small and so intimate, and the people that I've met here are amazing and so enthusiastic about anime. And I mean, that's what I love to bring to the table when I work on projects. That's my enthusiasm. I got into the industry, you know, there are a couple different type of people in the entertainment industry. There are people who get into it because they want fame and fortune, and there are other people who do it because they love this stuff. And that's kind of the place that I came from. I love anime, I love video games, and I want to bring that enthusiasm into the work that I do so that fans will enjoy it even more, so they'll see it's like, yes, this, she experiences the same fanaticism that I feel, but she's actually creating it, you know, and that's something that I think is incredibly important, and I've been a huge proponent of getting more fans into the industry. The person who actually got me into voiceover, who's been my voiceover mentor, is Dino Andrade, who is one of the biggest animation nerds on this planet, and he's an amazing voice actor, and he's an amazing voice actor because of his enthusiasm. I remember he recently did Arkham Asylum. He played Scarecrow, and he was nerding out like crazy over it, and I think that is the exact reaction. It's not, oh my god, I got this video game, I'm gonna get all this money. It's, oh my god, I get to play this amazing character who is so iconic. It's awesome that I grew up reading comic books about, seeing all these different interpretations, and, you know, now I get to give my own.
Now, yes.
That was a big statement going in there.
Big statement. And the best thing, I guess maybe one of these days we'll have to start doing video for these so we can get all the hand motions in there.
Yeah, I'm very expressive. People who see me in panels, and if you actually see me in the booth, my hands are like all over the place. That's something that I've actually had to control when, because I recently started doing camera work more in the last year and a half, 2 years. And the first take always, because I come from the animation background of big, and you have to really physicalize it to get it into your voice. The first take, the director always has to tell me, okay, Julie, you're here really big. We need you to bring it really low. This is a lot low key than that, a lot lower key than that. So that's almost always what happens when I get onto a set. But thankfully nowadays, now that I know that, I'm internalizing that, and on the way to the set, I'm like, okay, Julie, bring it in, calm, little motions.
So, when going back again to the subject of bullying and such, here at the convention, I've noticed that there's a lot of people who are very open and upfront and very social at conventions. They get this energy from the convention, but when they go back to the normal, I guess you could say, waking world of a school or college or everyday jobs and stuff, they seem to rein that energy back in, just kind of hide it, not be themselves. Are there any hints or tips that you could give our listeners about learning to express yourself more in the open than instead of hiding all that energy in the convention?
Yeah, I see that personally a lot, and I think it's a shame because this enthusiasm is what makes anime fans and video game fans so unique and so passionate. Passion is a beautiful thing. You should never have to hide your passion. If you feel passionate about anything, as long as it's not illegal, you know, I have to give that disclaimer.
Yes.
You know, that's something that should be cherished and celebrated, not looked down upon. Honestly, what I found helps me is find other people in your community. You know, go back, find other people in your community who share your interest, who share that enthusiasm. It's so interesting. I see things that I didn't even think about. My friend Warky was doing a Brony panel, and it was amazing to see how people were communicating and opening up about their personal experiences through My Little Pony, through characters in My Little Pony, and they felt so passionate because they connected to these characters. I'm like, that's amazing to me, and that's something that should never have to be hidden. You know, if you have to go online to talk to people about it, find people in your area. Because, you know, just like you're hiding it, probably there's somebody else at your work, at your school, that's hiding it too. And you shouldn't hide it separately. You should embrace it together. You know, find other people like you and find your community. Wherever you are, there is a community. There is help. You know, there are people who care, who are as enthusiastic as you. Do whatever you can to find them, you know. Don't be afraid to express your fandom to find other people like you. That's not... Whoever looks down upon you for it doesn't deserve your time of day. I'll be completely honest. If someone doesn't appreciate that you're passionate about science fiction, fantasy, animation, anime, horror... I'm a huge horror nerd myself. Mm-hmm. Eli Roth and Koji Suzuki are like two of my favorite people in the world. If other people don't embrace that about you, they're not worth your time of day. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line.
Thank you for giving us this interview here. This has been Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth with Radio DMG. And this is my host, my guest has been
Julie Ray Goldstein.
And good night. Say good night.
Oh, good night, everybody. And remember, never hide your passion. Show your true colors.
Start this impromptu Q&A. Why not introduce yourself since it is your Q&A?
Certainly. Hi guys, my name is Julie Ray Goldstein. I'm a voice actress in animation, anime, video games. You might have seen some of the animes that I've been in: Paradise Kiss, Eureka 7, Magical Girl, Lyrical Nanoha, Tweeny Witches, video games, Magna Carta 2, Artanelico Koga, Nell of RCL, I believe is the full name. Also, Majin and the Forsaken Kingdom, which is a very fun game. I actually played through that entire thing.
That's the one on the... Is that on the Wii or is that on the PS3? Or what system is that on?
That was on PS3 and Xbox 360. It's a fun game. You're walking around as a person. It's very Zelda-like. You're walking around, you're a little person who finds this giant creature called the Majin, and you command him to do things and kind of solve puzzles that way. It's really fun. It's kind of Zelda-like.
How did you get into voice acting?
It's an interesting question. You know, most of the previous generation of voice actors kind of fell into it. I think currently we're seeing a lot of voice actors who are falling into it, not necessarily falling into it, but more because they're fans of anime and that's how they're getting into it nowadays. You see a lot more people going that method nowadays. As for my personal story, I actually started as a fan. I've been going to anime conventions since 1999, early 2000, and I met a voice actress at Fanimecon, who had a big impression on me, and so I started taking some acting classes just because I thought, you know, it's fun, why not do it? And then a couple years later, I went to AX in 2005, and they were doing a competition called AX Idol, and they were doing it in voice acting and singing, and I decided to throw my hat in the ring and try it out for voice acting. And the judges of the competition were Crispin Freeman and Talison Jaffe of Helsing, and I ended up winning, and both Crispin and Talison loved what I did, and kind of from there I got my first audition with Bang Zoom in Southern California, A couple months later, I moved to LA, started getting more auditions, started working with Bang Zoom, got an agent, and it kind of just started snowballing from there.
What's it like?
What's your favorite character you voice acted?
Favorite? It's hard to say favorite. It's kind of like, that's kind of like a Sophie's Choice sort of thing. It's kind of like, which is the favorite of your children? Because every character that you create is essentially your child. But honestly, I think one of the characters that I had the most fun with was Precia Testarossa in Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha. And I think it was because I've always had a thing for villains, and especially villains who aren't necessarily evil per se, but basically because of their circumstances have kind of become the people that they are. I remember when I started watching anime, one of the first animes that I saw was Fushigi Yugi, and I remember the moment that I saw Nakago's backstory. If anybody still remembers Fushigi Yugi and the villain of that show, Nakago, I believe that was his name. I'm kind of going back in my memory. But I remember watching his backstory. Come on in, guys.
Is this what's it called?
Julie Ray Goldstein. I'm the voice actress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're doing it. Just doing
just
a Q&A.
Come on down. Grab some chairs and come on down. It's an informal Q&A.
Is this
Q&A.
Yeah.
Is
this,
oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they messed up on the mat.
Yeah. Just grab some chairs,
so
bring it on over.
Yeah, we were looking for the
Organization
13. Organization 13.
That's going to be the next.
Oh, yeah, that's the next one.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
At this rate,
everything is just going on.
Why not come in and ask some questions?
Or sit down and relax.
Why not come in and ask some questions?
Yeah, we're very friendly right now. And we're talking very cool anime stuff.
Until that one question is asked.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of... I was essentially talking... They were asking about my favorite... the favorite role that I've done. And personally, one of the ones that kind of impacted me the most was Precia Testarossa in Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha, which is the villain of the story. And I've always had an interest in villains with kind of a mysterious or interesting past that kind of made them the person that they are. And as I was mentioning before, one of the animes that kind of really had an impression on me was Fushigi Yugi, which is one of the first animes that I saw when I got into anime. And I remember when I saw Nakago's backstory, it just impacted me so much to see that he wasn't this evil guy. He was doing what he thought was right. It was his own sense of justice. And I think in a way I was able to apply that with Precia. Precia is not an evil woman who's trying to destroy the world. She's this tortured soul who lost her daughter and is trying to do anything she can, regardless of who's in her way, to get her daughter back. So it really resounded with me personally, and that's kind of what stayed with me.
Have you worked in Texas at all? In Texas?
No, I haven't. I haven't gone over there. Most of the people who work in Texas who live in LA, it's usually because they've come from Texas. It's hard because anime, unfortunately, doesn't pay as much as some of the other venues in entertainment, even original animation. So it's not usually worth the production cost to fly somebody from Los Angeles to Texas to do voiceover.
So nothing with Funimation yet?
Nothing directly with Funimation, although there were a couple pseudo co-productions. For example, I know Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha was part of the Genion library that Funimation ended up distributing after Genion went out of business. So, indirectly, I guess you could say.
How did, since you've worked at Bang Zoom for a while, how did the death of Genion affect Bang Zoom Entertainment? Because a lot of what Bang Zoom did was for Genion.
Well, I can't really answer that question directly because I'm an independent contractor personally.
Okay.
Bang Zoom calls me, well, I am union, but when you do work, that's not on a salary basis. You're basically hired by the project, and you're hired for a certain amount by the project. So I'm not, when I work for Bang Zoom, I'm not an employee of Bang Zoom. I'm just working for this project. I'm just working on this project. So I don't know about their specific workings, but I do know from what I've seen, from what I've worked on personally, I see that it hasn't really affected the amount of production, but shifted the focus of production. I've seen a lot more video games and original animation being recorded at Bangzoom than what Genion was doing, which was primarily anime. It seems that anime, especially in LA, is starting to become few and far between.
Yeah, I have to ask. So how do you feel that characters from Nanoha were originally characters from a light novel called Triangle Heart?
I also heard that there was an OVA of Triangle Heart, too, that they made. And I love that story, and it doesn't affect me negatively. I like seeing more about the mythology of these people. And especially, I remember reading a lot about Presya herself, and there's a lot that doesn't show up in the series, and I know some of it, I think they mention in Triangle Heart, about her with her daughter and her previous familiar, and they went they did some of that story in the movie that they released, I think, about 2 years ago. And I find it fascinating, because it's more of these pieces of this puzzle, of this tortured woman who is not necessarily evil because she wants to destroy the world. She's just a child of circumstance. These things have happened to her, and this is how she deals. This is how she tries to bring control back to her life.
What did you do before getting into anime? And before voice acting?
You mean like a full-time job?
Well, what did you do before? Yeah.
Okay. Unfortunately, voiceover is not as lucrative as many people think it is. Even the union rate for dubbing anime is $64.50 an hour. So unless, you're a main character on three different shows at the same time,
like Vic,
you can't make a living.
Kyle.
Yeah, and it's hard to be doing just anime. That's why a lot of people move into video games and other stuff. Like, personally, I do a lot of voiceover for industrial type of projects, and I know a lot of other voice actors in LA who do a lot of industrial projects.
So like, do you need, like, more than one job then? Like, to make ends meet and stuff?
Yeah. Currently, I work with a telecommunications firm. I'm a techie. I've worked in all sorts of places. I worked with GPS systems. I worked in emergency management for a few years. I helped build a geek website called Soul Geek for a while, which is a dating site specifically for fantasy, science fiction, animation, and horror fans. I helped my my mentor, my voiceover mentor, Dino Andrade, build that back in 2007, and it's one of the most rewarding things that I think I've ever done in my life. So I've kind of run the gamut, but I've never been pleased with just doing something like being waiting tables while doing other things. I kind of need something that fulfills me as well, and being a techie, it's, you know, working with computers. I did work with online games with Disney Interactive for a while, too.
Oh.
I worked on Toontown Online and Pixie Hollow and Pirates of the Caribbean Online for a while, too. Yeah, and actually, speaking of Disney, for a while, probably my favorite job in my entire life was, for a while, I was a skipper on the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland.
Oh, that's cool. So, since you're a techie, do you have an engineering degree or something?
No, I kind of fell into it. I started getting into tech when I was in college. It was kind of the job I was doing while I was in college. I started working for a GPS company in the tech support, and I kind of realized that I kind of had a knack for it. I've never used a PC at home that I didn't build. Everything at home I've built, I just bought a new laptop. I purposefully bought the one with the least RAM.
It was great to meet you. Sorry.
Oh, it was great to meet you guys, too.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I purposefully got a computer with very little RAM so that I could do some upgrades on it afterwards. I kind of just fell into it. And for a lot of techie jobs, I find that it's not so much having a degree in engineering, but just having a degree, period. Of other things that I've done, too, I worked with MySpace for, like, 3 years, too.
You worked at MySpace?
At MySpace,
what,
yes.
What were you going to college for?
I actually graduated with a theater arts degree. Yeah, with a specific in performance. Yeah, I studied acting in college. And then, but as I was going through college, I kind of developed this techie side. I had a friend who was an engineer, and that's how I learned how to build computers and learn software. And through working in technical support, I kind of started learning about GPS and GIS systems, and that led me to emergency management, which led me to working on websites, which brought me to MMOs and social networking, working with MySpace. So it's kind of run the gamut.
Well, back onto some of the shows that you've been in. If you could change the fate of one of the characters that you've played, who would it be and how would you change how their story plays out?
Wow. Yeah. I find it hard to say that. That's a very good question. I find it hard to say because what happened to these characters, every single character that I've played, I feel like it's their fate, and that was what the author intended to happen to them. So, I mean, I could have I guess in a way I could write my own fanfic about certain things that would happen. You know, I'd give Precia a happy ending, or give Beerus from Tweeny Witches, you know, a triumphant takeover of the witch world, or, you know, and Mute comes back triumphant to the Artanelico world. Me saying how I would change it would really do a disservice to the stories that these creators have told, because this is their creation, and these characters already talked to them and told them what their fates are. And I really feel that I am just a conduit to tell their stories. I'm not the one to decide the fate of these stories.
Speaking of stories, have you read any good books lately that you would love to see made into, say, an animation or a movie?
One of my favorite book series is actually the Ring series. It's one of my personal fandoms by Koji Suzuki. He did four Ring books. Ring, Rasen, Loop, and Birthday, which is, if you've seen the movie The Ring, that's basically, it came from the Japanese movie Ringu, which there were three Ringu, Ringu 2, and Ringu 0. Actually, there was also a Rasen movie that was made. But this is my own nerddom coming out, because I love the series. I love the series that Koji Suzuki has created. And I always thought that it would be great to see it animated. And if I can be a little egotistical, I would have loved to, in an animated version of the entire book series, play Sadako. Because I think she's such an interesting character, and she's very much a character who is a child of circumstance. People think, oh, she's this ghost, she's evil. It's like, no, she has this entire backstory. Actually, Sadako, in the books, she originally wanted to be an actress. And it's very interesting. Like, I read Sadako's story through Koji Suzuki, and I see there's so many things that I just identify with her. It's like, I feel like I could be a great conduit for this character, so I'd love to see that animated. I'd love to see that entire mythology animated. And I'm ecstatic to hear that I recently read on ANN that Koji Suzuki is thinking about writing another a novel about Sadako.
What's up?
Glad to see you here. Join us.
So, what's going on? What draws this is, you to the villains or the
Julie
horror Wilson side of this?
Because
the Ring series is a bit of a horror. Yeah, kind of like the Whispering Corridor series, or things like A Tale of Three Two Sisters, or items like that. What draws you to the horror genre?
I love that you mention A Tale of Two Sisters. I think that's one of the most fascinating movies I've ever seen. Have you seen this movie?
Yes, I have. I own a lot of
Japanese
and Korean horror that...
Yeah.
I have to say, I always wanted to make a monologue, and I thought it would be great for theater students to make a monologue out of the dinner scene where the stepmother is telling the story about the father being naked, and it's a great scene. It's this great scene that she's just laughing, telling the story that she's created in her own head, and nobody remembers it, and she's laughing, and everybody's just staring at her like, what are you talking about? I always thought that was a genius scene, and it's a great movie, by the way.
Sorry for my ignorance.
Oh, sure.
Tale of Two Sisters, not familiar with that one.
Essentially, it's a story about these two sisters who move back in with with their father and their new stepmother, and weird things start happening in the house. Like, they start hearing things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's out from Tartan, USA, and you should totally rent it or find it. I think Netflix has it. It's definitely worth it. It's
Korean. Yeah.
Korean, like The Thirst. Or that. Yeah.
So Netflix actually has.
It should, yeah.
Oh, okay. Need to actually get.
Oh, you need to check it out.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie, and specifically that scene. I remember that's the scene that stuck with me the entire time because I don't want to give any spoilers, but the kind of ending and the way they wrap it up, it's kind of a story that's been done before, but there are so many interesting elements that are so unique. Like that dinner scene, that will always stick in my head. It will always stay with me. That's one of those scenes. But yeah, I think it's the idea of what human nature is, and that's really a theme that horror movies, I think, especially nowadays, especially Japanese horror movies, and it's really moving on to American horror movies, are trying to explore. It's these themes. It's not just the slasher, oh, we're running from the scary monster or the scary ghost. It's, yes.
Or Antichrist, like Lars von Trier's Antichrist.
I love Lars von Trier's movies. Oh, Melancholia blew me away.
I haven't seen that one yet, so no spoilers.
No, you can spoil Melancholia. It's so unique. But especially like Saw, I love this idea of Saw that that what he's trying to do through in his own way, Jigsaw, is help people, and it's this entire philosophy. It's not. I can't necessarily say, yes, killing people is wrong, but I can't necessarily say that I disagree with his philosophy that sometimes you need to know why you're alive. You need to really be given a reason or kind of given that decision of, do you want to actually go on with a meaningful life, or do you just want to waste it away? And that's kind of, that's essentially the philosophy that Jigsaw brings. And I there are so many other movies like that have really explored it. I love Eli Roth's works, Hostel, Cabin Fever, and they really go back down to this primal thing about when it comes down to it, what makes us human and what makes us make the decisions that we make.
Kind of like Battle Royale or even The Hunger Games.
That's exactly where I was going. And I'm a huge Battle Royale fan, too. Koshun Takami's novel. If you haven't read it and you're a Battle Royale fan, you need to read Koshun Takami's original Battle Royale novel. It's been out by Viz for a while. And it's
this thick. Well, it's about 2 inches thick.
I haven't seen
it. It reads like that.
I haven't read the novel, but I've seen the live action movie and I've seen the manga. And to be honest, I like the live action movie better than the manga. Because the manga, I'm like, is this DBZ? Because some of the fights, and I'm like, and half the time I'm going, I don't understand how the world is working. Like, what about citizens? Are we only going to focus on them? Like, how does the rest of the country? Because it sounds like a law that they know about, or it sounds like Catch-22 a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm not really given that in the manga or the movie.
You want the backstory.
Yeah.
So you might really like The Hunger Games. Have you checked those out yet?
I've been wanting to go see that movie. But I heard it was a book series, is that right?
Yeah. The books are pretty good.
I finally read that book, right? Because I'm a huge Battle Royale fan.
Is he here?
Yeah.
Should brought him here. He could have asked some questions.
Yeah.
I have to say about The Hunger Games, I love the first two books. I kind of thought that there was some stuff in the finale in that third book that I know why some decisions were made for the ending of that story, but talking about how you changed stories, I don't think some things that happened were kind of had a purpose. I felt that there's a lot of stuff in there that's shock value, and which is oddly enough what a lot of people said about Battle Royale, is that it's all about shock value.
Whoa.
It's not really what it is. And talking about the difference between the movies and the books and the manga, it's very interesting because they essentially tell different stories, because if you look at the book, the manga, and the movie, all three of them, the students are essentially the same people throughout all three of them. What changes is the teacher. He's a completely different character in the book, in the movie, and in the novel. He's a completely different person. The guy in the manga is incredibly sadistic. The guy in the novel, he's very much to bring this Full Metal Alchemist thing, the dog of the military. He just does it because this is what he knows and this is what it is. And then you have Beat Takeshi's amazing performance in the movie, which is, he really humanizes that character a lot. And he's this guy who, he is giving, he's essentially this tortured, kind of the idea of the tortured villain. He's doing this because of, out of this idea of tough love. He's doing it because he's bringing these kids to this island because he has certain kids that he wants to win, because he has deemed that these are the kids that deserve to live and the rest of them just need to be pushed aside. And it's kind of his own idea.
Yeah, you get sliced in the ass and then by the students, and then later he does the same thing with that student and then explodes him.
Yeah.
Explodes his collar.
That's right, because he gets knifed by the student at the beginning, and it's very much that idea. Yeah, it's very much that idea about the idea that it, for him, for that teacher specifically, he's like that, but it's for a reason. It's because he's been pushed to the brink. You know, it's kind of this fallen down situation. You get pushed to the brink so often, it's just, it's human nature to crack.
Yeah.
And that's...
And he does.
Have you ever seen the manga sequel, Blitz Royale?
I didn't read the manga sequel. I saw the movie sequel, which I thought was very interesting because I remember at the time a lot of people were talking about how it was very anti-American in sentiment, and I honestly didn't get that. I thought it was...
To be honest, until I read the novel, I'm still kind of trying to understand the world of Battle Royale. With the Blitz Royale, I'm kind of just like, yeah, this was just... I feel like it's just a cash-in on something that people actually love. Only it runs with the same name.
There were some good... The movie itself, I will say, did have some really good performances. The teacher, the guy who plays the teacher in the movie. It's very odd because there's not a lot of sense to it, but there's this oddness that you can't help but grab onto.
It's like a dystopian view of the world.
Mm-hmm. It's a very dystopian view, and I can understand why people thought it was very anti-American. It was very pro-Afghanistan. And this was around the time, you know, in the years right after 9/11. So I can understand why a lot of people saw it that way, but for me it was just an anti-war story. It wasn't necessarily anti-American.
Kind of like how, I don't know, politics is kind of a sensitive issue with people all the time. Like, what is your real take on, Have you spent much time on the internet lately, seeing the whole Kony 2012 thing?
You know, I've seen people talking about the Kony 2012, but it's... I haven't actually watched the video. I know a lot of people have watched the video, like a lot of people, and a lot of people are talking about it. Personally, this has been a very long week for me, just because I was coming here to this convention, so I had to prepare. But also... regardless of the fact that it was a busy week for me in general, I made the mistake of purchasing The Old Republic early in this week.
Oh.
So...
No, you don't need to apologize for that.
No, that's not a mistake.
No. No, that's like apologizing, oh, I missed work because I played Skyrim.
I was going to work, and then... Yeah.
Skyrim came out.
Yeah.
I remember my professor... canceled an entire week of classes so he could play Skyrim.
That is an awesome professor.
Yeah,
I want to take his class.
He isn't capable of teaching though.
Oh.
So he's a fun guy to be with. He just can't teach to save a lot.
That's a shame because he sounds like a great guy.
Oh yeah. Jim Ward.
Oh, I know that name.
Yeah.
Computer science.
Yeah. Game design. I had to switch a degree because I couldn't learn from him.
Kalita's an interesting one to take.
What?
Speaking of degrees, you had the actual
degree.
Actually,
I had them for.
So, have you been on any stage performances or plays that you'd like to venture?
Very liberal.
I have been doing a lot of plays recently. I did about four different shows last year, I think. I started working at a theater called the Next Stage Theater in Hollywood. A great guy who runs it. His name is Chris Boone. He's one of the nicest people in Hollywood. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I keep going back and doing shows with him because it's so much fun. I initially did a show called The Vampire Masquerade, where I got to play vampires and this really nasty witch, and it was so much fun because I got to do that on stage and actually scare people in the audience because it was very interactive. I then did a show with him called The Seven Deadly Sins, and then not necessarily with him, but with the same theater, I did a show called Malice in Wonderland. I got to do some really fun stuff. It was mostly an improv show for me, even though it was scripted. Also last year, I got to do on stage a performance of the Vagina Monologues, which is something I hold very near, and V-Day is a cause that I really hold very near and dear to my heart. Honestly, just the idea of ending violence against women worldwide is it really is in some regions, especially in Africa, you know, going back to things like Kony.
Can't forget Iran.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly.
Muslim countries are abusive towards women.
Yeah, I just saw a Separation, the Iran movie that won the Academy Award for Best Film, and it just it boggles my mind to see that you know, to them that's just daily life.
Have you seen Persepolis?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should check that one out. It's a graphic novel, but also a French animated film about a girl growing up in Iran, and it's pretty good. Right after the Shah was taken out and the government that's there now was installed. So it's this lady named Marjane Satrapi, and she wrote this graphic novel. Actually, she had to write it outside of Iran because she can't really go back.
Yeah.
But there's the movie for it is really good. That's definitely worth checking out. Have you done any musical theater?
No musical theater yet. Unfortunately, that's something that I haven't seen as my strong suit. I didn't do musical theater in college, and I didn't really study it. But I've been doing some musical teachings lately, and I'm studying music with a couple different teachers. So maybe soon. It's my hope to eventually do some sort of musical theater. I do love music.
If you could pick one musical to perform in, which musical would you pick? Which character would you pick?
Book of Mormon.
Wow. Actually, no. I have an answer for that. And this is going to sound very, very strange. My favorite musical of all time is a musical that did not last very long on Broadway. The Vampire Lestat. I'm a huge Anne Rice fan, and I was lucky enough to see Vampire Lestat while it was in San Francisco before it went to the Broadway run, and I absolutely loved it, and I always thought that they really had a problem, I think, one of the problems that they had, and there were a lot of problems with the show, to be quite honest. I think one of the problems they had was defining the character of Armand. There's a description that Anne Rice gives him that it's very hard to display on stage. And I honestly would have loved to do that. I would have loved to play Armand, even though it's a male role. I think a woman can play a 17-year-old boy extremely well. And he's especially the way he's shown in the musical. He's again one of those tortured guys. He's this tortured villain. He's seen as a villain, but he's not really a villain. He's just doing...
He doesn't sparkle enough? No, I'm kidding.
I will admit, I've read all of Twilight, and I watch the movies, but it's only because...
On opening night?
Huh?
On opening night.
That's the only time to go over those.
Not on opening night. But I did see Eclipse when it was in IMAX. Oh. I'm really glad Breaking Dawn wasn't in IMAX, not that I needed to see that wedding in IMAX.
Oh, yeah.
Stephanie Meyer, still cast me in your movie. Please, the host is casting.
Oh,
please.
They are making a host movie?
From what I've heard.
Yeah, because that's her best book. I feel that one's her best book.
Here's the thing that I've found, and because I read all the books and I've watched the movies, and I think Stephanie Meyer knows how to write some very interesting characters. I just don't think she focuses on them. I personally, what kept me going through the entirety, what kept me reading all of Twilight was the character of Rosalie. I love her. She's such an interesting character, and I don't think Stephanie Meyer devoted nearly enough time. She devoted 20 pages to her in Eclipse that they did beautifully in the movie, which was the entire reason I went to see it in IMAX. But I don't think she focuses on him, and she honestly I think Rosalie would make a great perfect main character, and you'd be able to tell a really interesting and compelling story with Rosalie. I just don't think the characters that she chooses to be her main characters are the most compelling.
No, they're not.
Edward and Bella, they're very hollow. They're very empty.
Peter, Katniss, that type of thing.
No, yeah. Yeah, well, it's kind of hard because I think the Hunger Games had a little more to it.
Yeah.
I think Suzanne Collin kind of. I think between Suzanne Collins and Stephanie Meyer, they could make some really awesome work. Because they both have problems with their writing, but it's completely different problems. So I think they could complement each other really well. I gave you that idea. So Suzanne Collins, Stephanie Meyer, if you guys write a book together, I want royalties.
Just back to your voice acting career. During voice acting, has there ever been any funny incidents, pranks, or just weird how weird sessions go?
I have a really funny story that I like to tell. This was during recording Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha. There's this part towards the end where Precia has gone completely insane after delivering this monologue about how much she hates this shell of her daughter. And she has to, essentially, it's this maniacal laughter that goes on for about 30 seconds. I remember watching the preview, because essentially the way we record is they show us a preview of it for anime, so you can hear the Japanese and see how long the loop is, and then you go in and record it. And they played me the loop, and I remember I'm watching this loop, and it's still going, and I'm looking over to the director and the engineer, and I'm like, how much longer is there to this? And they're like, just keep watching. So I get really into it when I voice act. I'm very methodical, I guess is the word. So we go to record that and we start, and I get so into it. I'm arching my back, you know, trying to stay on mic and just getting so into it. And my body is like going up and down from the maniacal laughter. My headphones are flying backwards farther and farther, and I see that the loop has ended. When I noticed that the loop had ended, I was just so out of breath and completely into it that I fell. I didn't necessarily fall, but I kind of like fell forward to the floor. My headphones just fall off my head, and I start like heavily breathing. And suddenly, I pick up the headset, and I hear in my ear the director go, Julie, this time we'll record it. He was joking, thankfully. But it's one of those moments that I just looked at him and I'm like, you!
I have one quick question. Has there ever been an weird occurrence at a convention? Has any fan licked your cheek or anything like that?
Oh, you're talking about the guy that, like,
Chris Pratt. No, it's okay. I've never had like crazy fans do anything like that. Everybody's that I've met has been really respectful. Maybe especially in Magical Girl shows, I'm playing the only character over the age of 18. That's probably not the demographic that these things are usually going for, so it's not the characters that people are latching onto. So I honestly have not really had any sort of experience. I get asked for hugs a lot, which for me, it's like, I love hugging people. If it's a respectful hug, we understand that there are boundaries to a hug. Someone asked me to sign something. Someone asked me to sign a body part. I think at Anime Vegas last year, and my girlfriend was sitting right behind me, and I had to look back at her and go, "Sweetie, is it okay if I do this? Are you gonna get mad?"
Was it a girl or was it a guy?
No, that was a girl. She wanted me to sign a body part. Wow. It wasn't something that she had to expose herself, so I was like, okay, but I just don't want to get in trouble here. So, honestly, everybody's kind of been respectful, and not that that's an invitation to not be. I mean, I've seen some things. My friend Lauren, she played a character in Blaze Blue that this other character, I guess, grabs her breasts, and... someone was dressed at that as that character, and she came up to her and actually grabbed her breast. And I remember I saw it happen because I'm standing right next to her, and she comes up, and I'm like, "She's not gonna do it. She's not gonna do it." And then she does it, and I was like, "Oh my god, I don't know what to do. I'm just gonna let Lauren react because I can't."
How'd she react?
How did she react?
She said, "Please don't do that again." She was very respectful about that. Please, she said, "If you're gonna ask before you grab a body part, and please don't grab."
I would expect somebody get their block knocked off.
Well, it was a girl.
Oh,
it was a girl, a very young girl at that.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah. You know, so I haven't experienced that myself. I mean, people have asked me for hugs, but for me, it's okay as long as we know that we have the space between us. It's like,
sometimes
okay.
In the crowded room, I walk around, and there's a lot of young girls stuff. Sometimes I walk around the room with my hands behind my back, so I don't accidentally touch breasts and all that stuff. Kind of be careful.
but have you ever experienced a personal funny fan moment, or seeing a funny something funny that a fan did, or an interaction between a voice actor and a fan?
Huh.
One funny story.
Yeah.
One funny story. I can tell you a funny story of myself as a fan.
Alright.
Will that help?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I will always remember this. I mentioned before that I'm a huge, one of my fandoms is The Ring, mm-hmm. and Ringu, the Japanese. At one point, I'd gone to the premiere of one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and if you remember, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies were directed, the first three were directed by Gore Verbinski, who's the same person who directed The Ring, and I was such a nerd, because I knew I was going to this premiere, and I put my Ring DVD in my purse, because I was hoping I'd run into him, and I did, and I pulled it out, and I'm standing there. I just moved to LA. I was very impressionable at the time, too. And I stand there, and my hands are shaking with this Ring DVD, as I mentioned. I'm like, "Gore, please, please." And he comes up, and he's very happy about it. But he just grabs it, signs it, and looks at me and goes, "I believe you're at the wrong premiere, lass." And that's a moment that I will never forget. I will always remember him saying that to me.
Did you see Rango yet?
Yes.
Oh, aren't you glad he won?
I'm so happy because in the past couple of years there have been some great animated features that I think haven't gotten the recognition that they deserve.
Yeah, there's no Disney or Pixar animated.
Mm-hmm. Well, were they gonna put up Cars too?
Yeah, and
Tangled didn't get nominated.
Yeah, Tangled didn't get nominated, and Cars 2 didn't. I'm glad Princess and the Frog, I think, was the last Disney movie that did, and I don't remember if it did or not. I can't remember right now, but if it didn't, it deserved it.
Stuff like Summer Wars and Secret of Kells was nominated for like the last bit there and didn't get through, but yeah. A lot of great films just got passed over.
Also, my favorite of, I think it was 2 years ago that it was on, and it didn't really get much recognition, was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. I thought it was a great movie. I remember reading that book as a kid, and I heard that they were making an animated film out of it, and I remember thinking in my head, "Oh gosh, why are you doing this? You're gonna ruin this children's story." And I went to a screening of it, incredibly apprehensive with that mindset, and I just sit there and I was transfixed the entire movie, and it ended, and I just had like this pure joy that like came washed all over me, and I'm like, "I need to see that again. It just makes me feel so good."
I think he saw it in the theaters 3 times.
Oh,
yes, I did that in Coraline 3 times.
Have you,
Coraline is such a
great
film.
Have you ever seen How to Train a Pet Dragon?
How to Train a Dragon.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, I love that show.
Chris Sanders is a genius.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my friends were like, "Oh, you gotta see this." I'm like, "I haven't seen an anime, a Pixar like movie in a long time."
Oh, DreamWorks.
Yeah. I say Pixar like because I always associate everything after seeing Toy Story being one of my first ones, and I see that I'm going, "What? Well, this has effort." It was an awesome movie. So.
Yeah, you might like Brave's coming out, and also Paranorman looks like it'll be good.
Paranorman looks good. I'm also really looking forward to Tim Burton's Frankenweenie.
Yes,
that I'm really looking forward to. And the Disney movie that's coming out this year, which is Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, I haven't seen any screenshots of that. I've just seen the little arcade game thing they showed, and that's it. That's all I've seen of it.
They showed some footage of it at D23, the Disney Expo, this past year, and I went and I got into that.
So jealous.
That room was packed. That room for the studio presentation was crazy. I'd never seen so many people in a room at once, and I've been to Comic-Con. It's crazy. But they showed some footage of it, and it looks genius. It's so funny. It's a gamer's paradise. I really think gamers will really is.
Yeah, I've heard there's cameos from like characters from Mortal Kombat and Pac-Man and Mario Brothers and stuff. And I'm like, wait, what?
I think even I heard Zangief.
Yeah.
Is making an appearance in it.
I'm like, okay. That's going to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. Well, going back to something you mentioned earlier about V-Day. Have you done anything in support of, say, Take Back the Night or other groups like that? Any charity groups that you're working with?
Well, I do the presentation. Well, I've done Vagina Monologues more than once. I actually worked on it while I was in college as part of V-Day there. Not necessarily Take Back the Night. I have worked with a couple other organizations. I basically tried to be part of that, the Red Cross initiative when the earthquake in Japan happened last year. And I've really been trying to support. Stephanie Shea has a great charity called We Heart Japan.
Yeah, We Heart Japan.
Oh, yeah, that actually happened, I think, the night before Wasabi last year.
Anime Land was coming up on Sunday. That's actually the 1 year anniversary of that. Really? I remember we were at Anime Land Wasabi last year, and I found out about the earthquakes, and then I got a phone call from my aunt and uncle who were out in Japan, and
they were actually vacationing.
Yeah, they were vacationing in Hawaii, but they called them to make sure they're okay.
And
they found out that since they were on base, they had just there was a small crack in one of the counters. That was all that happened to them. But yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, and thankfully it seems like a nuclear crisis was averted for the most part. But it's
no
still...
No Godzilla yet.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the History Channel, and I think Discovery Channel did documentaries where they're showing footage of people filming while the earthquake is going on, and the floods are coming at, the tsunami's coming at them. You ever seen? Have you
that's,
ever seen?
That's crazy.
Yeah, because I remember they were talking to a school's custodian, and the school's relatively close to the beach that where their tsunami hit. And what ended up happening is they showed us a before picture, and he was lucky because he was near the top of the roof and the only one there. And they showed the school, and this is like a 4-story school, and. It looked, and the school outside doesn't even look anywhere close to where it was once. I mean, it looked completely grayed out, and it was a miracle that he didn't get washed over.
Yeah, it's one of the most, I think, I don't know if humbling is the word, but it's very haunting moments in my life in this. It goes back to tsunami and kind of the effect of it, but not necessarily Japan. You remember there was a tsunami, there was a horrible tsunami in Thailand back in
2004.
Yeah, end of 2004, beginning of 2005. And I actually was in Thailand about a week and a half after it happened.
Wow.
A week and a half, 2 weeks. And we were in Bangkok, and we were walking through a night market. And at the end of the night market, there was this giant wall where people had posted pictures of people that were still missing, that they hadn't found, that they were trying to get information on. And it's...
So
funny. Yeah, it's one of those haunting, one of the most haunting moments of my life. Noticing, seeing that, and, you know, thinking about these are people that these people have lost or might have lost. And kind of to bring a segue back, that's why I think I really like it when our storytelling really tells these human stories of things that have happened. Like, I would really like to see the people starting to write stories that mirror the earthquake in Japan and kind of the effect of it, Because you see these things in science fiction and in animation very often, and it's some of the most, the greatest storytelling ever. Thinking about that wall of all the people there, it reminded me a lot of an image that they created in Battlestar Galactica.
I think they also took down some people's digital cameras doing that tsunami, and they took the chips and found out who some of them were.
Yeah. And I mean, they essentially wrote about it in Battlestar Galactica, where they have a wall of all the people that they've lost. And I remember watching Battlestar Galactica. And
the original series or the remake?
The remake, the Ronald Moore version, which is amazing.
The original one's very campy compared to.
Yeah, I saw a couple episodes of the original one, and
late 70s or late 80s.
It's a very specific taste. I think the newer one, the Ronald D. Moore one, was very
dark.
It was very, very savvy. Like, he did know how to bring on a lot of current events in regards of politics and a lot of tragedies. And I honestly, I remember seeing the wall of people, and there's especially one picture of the bombing happening on Caprica. This sounds very nerdy, but it's how this great storytelling is told and why these stories kind of stick with us.
I remember the original Caprica when it was on the original Battlestar Galactica series. It was pretty cool. It looked like a cool city.
Yeah, and
the pyramids and.
There was a picture that they had on this wall in the New Galactica where it's the one soldier who's on his knees, defeated, seeing the city blowing up in a nuclear explosion. And it's kind of one of those things that really brings you back to, this is not just fiction. I mean, and this is the effect that it has. These are things that have happened, and we're telling these stories because we want to have an effect on people. We want to show what it does and why we need to stick together. Not to be all ended kind of on a happy peppy note, but it really is. I mean, art imitates life, imitates art. You know?
Kind of like, it's not the war, it's the soldier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's stories like that are the ones that stick with you the most. If you think of things like Platoon, it's a very human story about war.
As long as you're not reenacting scenes from Platoon with Martin Sheen. Have you seen that, with Charlie Sheen, have you seen that commercial? There's this commercial on DirecTV that shows up all the time when we're watching The Walking Dead, where they show that. It's great.
Speaking of, The Walking Dead is a great story about human interaction. So, that entire show is all about.
You haven't seen anything on the next episode, have you?
No.
Okay.
No.
But you are caught up, right?
I'm caught up. Yeah, I'm caught up to what played last week. There was already a spoiler that AMC kind of released that people who have been reading the comics kind of knew was going to happen.
Just the governor.
I don't know if I don't want to say it, but it's about a character who was supposed to die very early on.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's finally. It looks like he's finally going to bite the dust before this season is over. I'm not going to say the person's name. But pretty much everybody who watches The Walking Dead or is a fan of The Walking Dead probably knows what I'm talking about.
You guys watch The Walking Dead yet?
Seen the first season. Then I stopped having cable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it got too expensive.
And I'm looking for Panel Room 1?
2.
Yeah. 2?
Do you know where Panel Room 2 is?
No.
This is it. Oh.
Yeah.
Oops.
It's about 8:15.
Yeah, apparently the Panel Room 1 stuff is supposed to be in here. But this time found the things.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been nice doing just an impromptu Q&A.
Hi, this is Julie Ray Goldstein, and you're listening to Radio DMG.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth. I'm over here at Anime Land Wasabi 2012 with two special guests.
It's Warky the Chocobo.
And
Lisa Wilkinson. What's up?
Woo!
Woo! I've already interviewed you guys before, so if you miss those interviews, shame on you. Go back a couple episodes and check those out. So, since we've already introduced you before in those episodes, what have you guys been up to lately?
Go ahead, Warky.
All right.
Age before beauty.
Oh my gosh, it's so true though. It's true. She's beautiful. She's wearing a beautiful dress right now. She's on top of a piano.
I'm on top of a piano.
And she looks
fantastic. Fabulous Baker Boys.
Right. Or Blossom.
Oh, yeah.
I've been working on the next album for They Might Be Elders, my Mormon parody project.
Yay!
It's a lot of fun. I started doing a lot more voice acting, so I'm excited about that. I did a couple of video games, some I can't talk about, some I can. So, and I did some more audiobook work. So I'm really excited. I've got a lot of new prospects on the horizon. I just got my AFTRA card, so I'm all excited about that.
Yay!
If you don't know what AFTRA is, look it up. AFTRA.org.
Oh.
AFTRA.org. It doesn't matter. The point is that, you know, now that I'm part of that, I'm all excited about everything because I have a whole new prospect on the horizon, and, you know, life is really shaping up the way I really hoped and dreamed it always would.
So when is the new album coming out?
I have a release date, a soft date set for fall of this year.
Fall of this year. And what's it going to be called?
It's going to be called Truth Retold.
Truth Retold. So, real quick question before we move on to Liesl. What's your favorite pony?
I'm Rainbow Dash.
Now you're a Rainbow Dash fan.
If Derpy Hooves counts, I mean, him too.
Yes, yes.
Because I think he counts, but anyway, that's another story.
Oh, yes. And what have you been up to, too?
Let me see. Well, first of all, I do a lot of local correspondent work for Tokyo, for radio and TV. So I've done quite a few of, like, the red carpets, because I live in L.A. So, Emmys, I did the Golden Globes. I just worked for the Academy Awards again this year, also for the Grammys. And as far as video game work goes, I can't really talk that much about it because I had to sign an NDA form. However, I will be involved to some capacity in an upcoming newer version of Street Fighter versus Tekken. So that's all I can say about that. Other than that, I've been doing a lot of interpreting and what have you, I also, of course, this is kind of a very special weekend for us all here at Wasabi. But then,
yes.
And then also a lot of us that have friends or family in Japan. And last year, after the earthquake tsunami, I decided to put together basically some of the people that I've worked with, call out favors from all my time in Japan, get together a lot of industry people, and we put together a huge event in Japan to help raise awareness and also, of course, lots of money for the rebuilding of northern Japan. So I was in Japan in May and also in June for, you know, that kind of work as well.
How was the conditions over there in Japan?
The current conditions?
Yeah, the current conditions.
It's kind of a very hard question, actually, to answer. When I was over there in May, which, by the way, we raised $200,000. Yes, so we were very excited about that. But a lot of people, so in Tokyo right now, people are kind of, I mean, of course, this weekend they're talking about, but they're trying not to talk about that much because they're really getting tired of 24/7 having to think about what's been going on in Japan. And there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of information that was not released by the government that's kind of starting to find its way out now. So there's just a lot of, it's kind of a combination of, in some ways, denial, like not wanting to know what's going on, frustration with lack of rebuilding, and also a lot of people, especially the ones that are on ground zero for the disaster, are really worried that the world's just going to kind of go ahead and remember the next natural disaster and forget about them. So there's a lot of, it's a very complex situation. What was quite interesting, though, I talked to a very good friend of mine who is a huge actor in Japan. And, you know, when I was there in May, I told him what I was doing, you know, about this event that I was putting together. And his take on this whole thing was quite interesting and would probably be a little bit controversial. He said that he felt that it was actually a huge opportunity for Japan, this earthquake and disaster, and he felt that maybe it might have, in a way, been a bit of a wake-up call for Japan, because they have been in a recession for the past 20 years, and then There's just been, it's been, like, economically, financially, everything, the country has kind of been, in a way, at a stalemate in a lot of areas and a lot of industries. And so he told me, I kind of don't want to say his name.
No, you don't have to.
Yeah, it was kind of in confidence, but he's like, you know, he calls me Richan. He's like, you know, Richan, I really think that this is, he's like, people, I don't really like to say this out loud that much, but I think this is a huge opportunity for Japan to kind of get back to the glory days, like when they were, you know, when, like in the early, like 80s, during the whole bubble time, except during that time, there was money thrown away, and there was a lot of carelessness. But he's like, I really wish that Japan would use this opportunity to rebuild smarter. And, you know, it's also an opportunity to really show, because there's a lot of rivalry going on right now between Japan and China. And, you know, like, how is Japan going to be able to fit into the current world business model or whatever? So he's like, I really hope that Japan can use this opportunity to kind of figure out once more where its place is in the world. And I thought that was incredibly, in a way, kind of brave way of looking at things, but then also very interesting way of looking at things. But yeah, so there, but like I was kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, there's just still a lot of conflict, but there's also a lot of sadness still. And maybe what a lot of people don't know is that there continue to be so many earthquakes in Japan. Every time I have so many people, I'll, you know, on my Facebook, of course, who are still in Japan, and I'll read status updates, shaking again, or, you know, like stuff like that. So it continues to be a very, very current problem situation.
But it could lead to increased nationalism, which would be good for Japan in establishing their identity in the 21st century.
Well, yes, I think I would have to kind of, I would have to halfway agree with that. Like, I think that there is actually a very strong sense of nationalism in Japan. Some of it, though, is not necessarily good.
Mm.
And that would be especially in the government, especially with the Tokyo mayor. And there's a lot of stuff kind of that is probably, and I think a lot of that tends to come from a country being in recession. You see a much stronger sense of nationalism. I do, however, think that the side of me that's agreeing with you, the pride aspect of it, as in, like, getting back to a lot of the core values that Japan is known for, you know, their work ethic, and the unspoken respect for relationships between people, especially in business. The past 10 years, a lot of that has been gone, I find. And it seems like people are kind of analyzing once more what's really important, you know? So I do think in that aspect.
In a way, kind of like in Panama, after... actually, a little bit before Manuel Noriega was ousted, there was a brand that became really popular after that called My Name is Panama. Mm-hmm. And that was essentially kind of like a national pride type of thing. Maybe there should be something like My Name is Japan.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with you, actually. I think that's a great idea.
You can use it.
I know.
All right.
Make some good shirts.
Run with it, exactly.
Yeah. But, I had actually, we did an interview with Stephanie Shea at Non-Descon, and she has the I Heart Japan charity, and
yes.
One of the things we asked was about how can you help increase mind share, or to increase people's awareness of what happened in Japan years from now? Because, like, at the time, it was like the 10th anniversary of 9/11, where do you feel that Japan will be at the 10th anniversary of the earthquakes?
I have no clue. I mean, I don't think any of us even really knew where things would be at the one-year anniversary, you know? And I think as far as predicting that, I don't even think that I can fathom, like, where we would be 10 years from now. I do think, however, that And this is kind of my I Am Japan national pride coming out. But I do think that the Japanese are incredibly tenacious and very honorable to the most part. And so I do think that they'll figure things out. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of hope and a lot of love for what they're doing. There is a lot of rebuilding that is going on. A lot of my friends are there making trips every week. I have another friend who is on the government level. She's actually helping a lot with the awareness by, like, and this is an interesting development from the earthquake and tsunami, but a lot of political figures are now using social media to kind of help keep awareness about the earthquake and tsunami. Some of the mayors from the hardest hit cities are doing that, and my girlfriend's actually doing the translating for one of the mayor's tweets. Facebook and for Twitter.
That's great.
Yeah, so they are, you know, I mean, they are reaching out. And I think, like, and honestly, I mean, I think that, of course, that's something that the world needs to be very conscious of. But it's also, it's a very, very much of an interactive thing, you know. I mean, like, I think it's also the responsibility of people in Japan to keep reminding. And this is where social media, I think, will have a huge part in that. And last year, with what happened, it was quite interesting because until the disaster, Twitter was by far the largest used and most popular form of social media. And then during the whole weekend of the earthquake and tsunami, when people were trying to find their relatives, or they were trying to reach out and make sure that everyone was okay, it was interesting how they didn't use Twitter, they used Facebook. And so all of a sudden, like this past year, I have gotten Facebook requests from people I would have never suspected would be on Facebook. You know, like the Japanese, like, don't really enjoy telling too much information about themselves. They don't like the whole Facebook. You do a lot of pictures. You do this. You do that. And so this is one of the reasons that supposedly Facebook has never been that popular in Japan. That after the disaster, huge popularity surge in Facebook. Yeah. So that was quite a very interesting development, I thought.
So, back to Warfie again. Hey, yeah, you're here. He's still here.
I'm still here.
Like, Zap, he's like, oh,
sorry.
I'm here.
I'm like, what? Who? yes, hi.
So, you know, if you didn't come to this convention, I'm not sure how many guests they really would have. But, yeah.
And you brought all the guests.
Oh, that's yes, you did. So, Don't let your newfound success go to your head, though, you know?
Too late.
Like, oh, too late? Okay. Like, how does one stay humble in the face of this upcoming onslaught of work and fame and fortune?
I make sure everybody acknowledges my humility.
Oh. You got a sign.
You got a sign, right. Yeah.
I am great.
Now worship. No, wait. No, I'm being... it's funny. I don't know. They're guests and stuff, but at the same time, they're really my friends. I mean, I pick guests, you know, based on popularity and everything else, of course. But at the same time, it's like it's just wonderful just to be able to see them again and just say, hey, you know, would you do a show with me? And I'm gonna be here, and they've been just
Ice Machine's
amazing.
Oh yeah,
it's really nice the response that I get from each person. You know, well, you know, can we do this? Can we do that? You know, we negotiate it out just like any other con would, but it's nice because depending on how the guests all relate to each other and how they all work together, like, everybody's just so friendly. It gives it such a family atmosphere. It's such a friendly atmosphere. And I've noticed that when I do pick the guests, especially, the ones that, you know, will interact with fans, the ones that will stay the extra, you know, 10 minutes off the line just to, you know, for the autographs or whatever. Yeah. Like, those things are so important to me, and it means so much to the fans. When I was a kid, I went to a convention, and I wanted to meet this person so badly, and they cut the line right in front of me. Mm. And so I waited there for like 3 hours to go see this person, and I didn't get to see them. Mm. Years later, I got to work with them. So it didn't matter. But that was epic in itself. But I remember feeling so disappointed in that. And I saw a couple of guests just once in a while, just all of a sudden, you catch those moments that, you know, no one talks about and no one really sees. But there was this girl who, like, came too late, and they cut the line, everything was over. And the guest walked out, and he saw her, and he was like, the girl just, like, stared, and she just pointed, and she just, like, started crying. He goes, well, what's wrong? What's going on? And he goes, I came to see you, but they cut the line. He goes, well, I'm here right now. Do you want a hug? And she, like, screamed and bawled even harder at that point. But then he's like, what'd you want? He goes, well, I wanted you to sign this. He goes, sure. And signs and drew a little picture and everything. And so now she's a diehard fan forever for that guest. But, you know, that it's the little things like that that make up so much of, like, the precious moments in a con, the things that will help mold you and forge you to, like, realize that, you know, I shouldn't give up hope because there's always something, you know. You stay optimistic. I just love conventions. I love doing what I do and, you know, getting everybody that we get because they're all so kind. Everybody's so friendly, so sweet, so, like, the synergy is just so uplifting.
The energy is great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I'm just saying.
And also, I think if I can interject, like,
yes, please.
Yeah. Is the glue, really, for this whole, I mean, he's kind of like almost this incredible go-between, between the fans and between the guests, because he's been both and is both. Mm-hmm. And,
Big Daddy
so,
Worky.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, you know, so I think that it's because it's a huge, I mean, you know, my whole con career has really been mostly because Warky has really, you know, like, kind of taken me on, you know? Yeah, and so, and I think that that's really important, though. I think that there needs to be kind of that glue, and a lot of the cons don't necessarily have that, so it's wonderful to have that, you know, and it's, do not underestimate Big Daddy Warky!
Yeah, it's been great having you guys on, too. And we have to get going soon, so.
Oh, right, right.
So
I know.
Constantly.
We've got tournaments and things.
We're always moving.
Oh, yeah. We've
got to keep going.
But it's been great having you guys here. This has been Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I've been here with
Lisa Wilkerson.
And
Warky T. Chocobo.
And say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
And that's how all of that went down. Okay, that was actually a lot longer than I was expecting this episode to be. But hey, that was all of our Anime Land Wasabi 2012 coverage. Woo! We still have some more videos that we're going to put up. Let me go ahead and use this time to, pitch a few things. Follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, go to RadioDMG.com, DMGIce.com, or AnimationIsArt.com. You can also use all the different variants. Cam Creature will take you to DMGIce. Don't ask me what I might do with that in the future, but we might do something with that in the future. Also, ColoradoAnime.com and ColoradoAnime.info both take you to Animation is Art. TheMileHighMouth.com takes you to Radio DMG, and we have a bunch of other stuff that takes you to DMG Ice. I'm not going to reveal the full list because it's kind of interesting. It's surprising what we've been able to nab. But, yes. Anywho, I should take this time just to say next episode will probably be we'll probably record an Animation is Art podcast episode. I've already worked on the opening for that, and that'll be myself and Sarah. And we'll probably talk about each of the shows will have a different theme. Like, we'll be talking about a specific show or a specific series or movie. And look forward to that. That's actually going to be more story-oriented. In fact, we're hoping to move a lot of this recording equipment into the store because the store has this wonderful little back room that would make an excellent studio. So, looking forward to bringing that to you. We don't do a lot of shout-outs on this show. I think what I'm going to do in the future is record an episode that's just my podcast shout-outs. What I listen to, what I read, and what I watch. But mostly what I listen to. So that should be interesting, because if I did a full housekeeping type podcast shout-out thingy, I would say I listen to somewhere between 10, 15 shows, because I always have something. I found that, like, when I'm out there, like, doing, say, housework or yard work, whenever I ever do that, or whenever I ever actually do housework, or when I'm wandering around walking or shopping or whatnot, I like to have something in one of my ears, at least. And it's usually an audiobook or a broadcast of some sort. Sometimes stuff off the radio. I hardly listen to music. I love music, but I don't listen to enough of it. Instead, I listen more to a lot of different podcasts, like the HP Podcraft, or Anime News Network's Ancast. I like Film Spotting. I like Wall Builders. I listen to stuff from the Cato Foundations. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I listen to on a wide variety of subjects. I'm one of those people who is like, I'm picky about it. I mean, I love a lot of the stuff that's on Smodcast, for example. I can't stand most of the stuff that's on National Public Radio. I mean, Prairie Home Companion is awful. I don't know how that show lasted for so long. But, I'm just going to have to do a show where I just do shout-outs. We're also going to have to do a show where we read off feedback, because we do actually get a good amount of feedback, mostly for our Flickr and YouTube channels. In fact, I get maybe 10, 15, 20 comments a day on that, on our YouTube channel. We get a lot of comments on it. Lots of people subscribe. In fact, I think it's kind of funny that compared to some other websites or other websites in our genre that have YouTubes or whatnot, we're almost to 1,000 subscribers. Well, almost 800 subscribers, but yeah, we have a lot of subscribers to that, and then a lot of people follow the Flickr, and they comment on it. We get Facebook comments, lots of likes on there. We get a lot of good feedback, and I think I should dedicate a show just to do the feedback. What I'm thinking is we're going to add the feedback stuff and the shout-outs to our newsity shows, if there's not that much newsity. In fact, I might just do we'll do a 100% newsity show where we just do shout-outs, because that could take a little while, and about 15 minutes. But yeah, that's our plans. See you next episode. Good night.
Just say something, I guess, right?
Okay.
Woo!
What up?
Hey!
Woo!
What's up?
Yeah, what's up? You're listening to Radio DMG.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Yeah. Okay, right now we're just testing the audio. Go ahead and say something.
Hi, this is a test. This is only a test. In an actual emergency, you should run the hell away from the emergency.
Good advice.